Warning: this program contains content that may not be suitable to some listeners. It contains decency, truth, ageless wisdom, a father who cares. It's Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. This is the program that looks at all things through the eyes of a biblical worldview. And we do so from the perspective of fathers, raising children. I'm raising five. Dave Buhner in studio today. He's raising five, too. And we're raising these children at a day when 36.4% of children are born without fathers, and a huge number of children are raised without fathers, and an even larger number of children are raised with fathers who really are disconnected from their homes. And so we on this program are encouraging other fathers and other mothers to reconnect with their children and raise their children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. So we're looking at the culture today through the eyes of a biblical worldview. We saw Narnia yesterday, speaking of the culture. Narnia grossed $109 million out of the gate this weekend. A second in the history of all of film. I guess the first was Return of the King, one of the Lord of the Rings series. And believe it or not, Dave, I know Breakback Mountain, the homosexual cowboy movie, has had a lot of press. In fact, 10 times the press, I think, of Narnia. I was amazed. Narnia's, you know, like page 4B in the entertainment section. But Breakback Mountain's right on page 1B. It's there. Everybody's going to go see it. And it raised $500,000. Yes, 0.5% of what Narnia raised over the weekend. Incredible.
Wow.
That's got to be a heartbreak for those who like the Breakback Mountain homosexual theme.
It's got to. People would rather see lions and tigers and bears on my rather than see a couple of queer cowboys.
I guess so. Homo on the Range just didn't make it this weekend. But Narnia also beat out Harry Potter. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire is now up in the hundreds of millions. It's not as hot as Narnia is. But there's a difference between Potter and Narnia. And we want to talk about this today on Generations. First of all, Harry Potter is a boy witch. He goes to a school. Here it is. I have not seen a Harry Potter movie. I've seen clips of it at Walmart. You know when you walk by the Walmart television? But I have not seen the Harry Potter movies. And I've seen a number of reviews about it. Anyway, the Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, they return to Hogwarts School for Witchcraft and Wizardry. That's a problem in and of itself. Because, you know, the Bible isn't hot on witchcraft.
No, it's not. It's not big on schools either.
Yeah, it's not. It's not hot on witchcraft, and it's certainly not hot on people that engage in sorcery, spellcasting, spiritism, and necromancy, all of which is done by Harry Potter, the junior witch in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And, you know, there are a lot of Christians that are hog wild about this movie Harry Potter. I don't know why. Because the Bible says, hey, witchcraft is this. It's speaking to dead spirits of dead people. It's necromancy. It's sorcery. It's casting spells. This is what the Bible talks about witchcraft. It says witchcraft is an abomination to God, and yet Christians still say, but it's really, really good. Now, nobody has yet bought into my Harry Potter series. I have a new Harry Potter series coming out where Harry Potter is not a witch. He's a rapist. Now, he does everything that rapists do. But you have to understand, he's a good rapist. And there's a redemptive theme that really weaves through the story and the screenplays. Ladies and gentlemen, today we want to talk about Narnia. Is Narnia any different from the magic of Harry Potter? And what about the movie? Some of our Christian friends like C.S. Lewis and some don't. We're going to talk about Narnia and C.S. Lewis. Is this a Christian worldview or isn't it? That next on Generations. Stay with us. Folks, we're back. This is Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. Today we're looking at Narnia. And the first episode of Narnia is out of the gate at $109 million this last weekend, promising to be one of the largest films, perhaps, in Hollywood history. And we watched this movie this last Monday. I had a great time with it. There are a lot of good parts to this movie. I'm going to say that this was the best movie theater experience I have had as long as I can remember. I can't remember when I saw a movie this good. It was good. It was great. It was entertaining. It was something I was comfortable having at least my older children watching beside me as we watched it. I liked the beavers. That was my favorite part of the movie. Remember the beavers? At the very beginning when the four children walk into the beaver den? Oh, they're great. They're just fantastic. Great personality. The beaver and his wife have this funny little relationship going on throughout. It's very entertaining. Very entertaining. Those who acted the children's part did a very good job. They're believable, I think, in every scene. The White Witch was a little more docile than I think a lot of people expected, but it was right. Because this docility was, I think, easily translated into a cold form of evil. Now, Aslan is another story. The Aslan of the movie is a little too tame for my taste. But then again, how is somebody going to present Aslan when you're a Christian? You instinctively want him to be the God-man. But that was not what C.S. Lewis wanted. He said, this is not an allegory. I'm not writing a Pilgrim's Progress here. This is a story. And there's going to be some lines of congruency with Christian thought. And there was throughout. But Aslan in the movie was pretty tame. And his roaring, not loud enough. Should have been louder. I think the scene at the rock where he is sacrificed in the resurrection scene wasn't as dramatic as I would have liked. But that's my take on it. I like the movie. There were some drawbacks. But overall, good, good movie. Now, some have compared the battle scenes in the movie between Lord of the Rings and what we had here. But that's a contrast of apples and oranges. How in the world are you going to compare the Return of the King leading the armies against Mordor against Peter, a 12-year-old kid leading the armies against the White Witch? You know, this is a children's story. You should never, never compare the battle scenes between what Peter does and what the king does in the Lord of the Rings. Okay, so that's my take on it. The film did not downplay, as far as I could see, any point of congruency with Christian thought, Christian themes in the literature. If there was some downplaying, I did not catch it. The Christian themes were unmistakable to the Christian mind. But, Dave, I'm wondering if this film is really going to have some kind of a significant evangelical gospel preaching Bible outreach to millions and millions of people. I don't think we're going to see that at all. I think the average person seeing this movie is going to just see a neat story of good guys getting the bad guys.
No, I don't think you'll find that this movie will be witnessing to the non-Christian a whole lot. I think God really wants Christians to be doing that instead of the movies.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I think that the strongest theme that you get in this movie is the incredible theme of this miserable, spoiled, rotten little boy who's exercises treachery, turns in his own brothers and sisters to the White Witch. Here's a wicked little boy who turns into a prince by means of a sacrifice. I think that's a powerful, powerful message. I mean, what has God done to us but the very same thing? What were we but miserable little wretches that God saved? And he has made us a kingdom of priests. That, to me, is a marvelous, marvelous message that C.S. Lewis brings out of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Now, what about the worldview of the message? Well, at one point, Aslan refers to God as the one who is in control of Narnia and all things. He actually makes that statement. God is in control of all things, and he is the one who has determined what is right and what is wrong. So, to me, that was one of the most explicit statements of a Christian worldview that you can find. In fact, you're going to find a lot of churches today that are not going to say that. God is in control of all things, including the hurricane, not a tame lion. God is in that kind of control. I wrote an article a number of weeks ago on how God is in control of all things, including what happened in New Orleans several months ago. I got a lot of feedback from Christians, and it wasn't positive. They said, you mean God caused these things to happen? God is in control of the winds and the waves as well? Impossible. Well, that is affirmed clearly in the Narnia tale, in this Narnia movie, and it is essential to a biblical worldview. A biblical worldview has to have a God who is above all things and who has established right and wrong, most certainly. I think C.S. Lewis understood that. You find that throughout his books as well. I think the one other example of that, it was in The Horse and His Boy, where these Aslan appears in various experiences throughout, and he is basically omnipresent and in control of all of the circumstances that come upon this character in The Horse and His Boy. So you have the sovereignty of God, the otherness of God throughout the Narnia tales, and that to me is an example of a biblical worldview throughout C.S. Lewis' writings.
Lewis may have said it's not an allegory, but it's pretty hard to deny some of the themes. Aslan's sacrifice and resurrection. You have a character named Peter who reestablishes a kingdom, much like the Apostle Peter and establishes the church. These themes are going through there. They're really unmistakable to one who is versed in the Bible, which is why I think there will be a whole bunch of people who will buy that it's not a Christian movie and it's not a Christian theme, and they won't see it that way. It doesn't smack you in the face with it.
And of course, I mean, he brings out this daughters of Eve and sons of Adam throughout. So there are biblical references throughout the story that are unmistakable to those who know the Bible. And maybe they can introduce some people to some of the themes of the Bible. Now, let's ask the question about Lewis's use of some of the Greek gods in the tale. Because some have said that this is an indication that C.S. Lewis is syncretistic and bringing in this pantheism or even a polytheism into his understanding of the world around us and in his fantastical world of Narnia. Well, let's examine this for a moment. Well, you know that he brings in the Roman god Bacchus, who is sort of a fornicating, wild-eyed party animal sort of god. Not a good god, okay? If you're going to have a god, Bacchus is not a very, very good god. But he's a Roman god. He shows up in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And he also brings in his fauns, his centaurs, and the dryads and others that are all idols or gods of the Greek mythology. Now, does this mean that what we have is a syncretism? Is he inviting all of the gods of the pantheon into Narnia and sort of creating a syncretistic religion? Now, this has been brought out. Now, you got to say, first of all, that Narnia is headed up by Aslan, and there is a competition with the White Witch. Now, evidently, the White Witch is some representation of the devil, or Satan. And there is this battle between evil and good throughout Narnia. But the question here is, are they on equal terms? See, the big question is, are we losing the creator-creature distinction in Narnia? That's the worldview question that people have to answer as they watch this. Now, you know what? I think the reason why C.S. Lewis used the Greek gods is because what was C.S. Lewis? What did he do?
C.S. Lewis was an Oxford professor of literature.
Yeah. He worked with classical literature. He taught classical literature. It was his life. Of course he was going to bring in some classical concepts or ideas or characters that he had read in some of his literature. So he brought that in. The real question then is he bringing in the concepts, the Greek concepts, into this? Now, you know, the Greek system of thought was monism. It was a monistic metaphysics. Now, that's a little bit complicated for some people, but let me explain it very, very simply. What C.S. Lewis was saying is that essence is in one long continuum, where you have basic life forms or basic existence or essence at the bottom. You have rocks at the bottom. Okay, would you say a rock is a very complex life form?
I wouldn't say it's a life form.
Yeah, it's not. It's not even, but it's an essence, the thing. So the Greek says you have things at the very bottom. You have rocks, and then eventually you have trees. And you have trees with kind of a personality or a little bit more life to it. And then you have, as you move up the life form, you've got a half animal, half man. And then you have a full man. Then you have a half man, half God. Then you have the full God. Sort of life is on this one continuum. There is no difference between the God who created it all and the creation. See, that's monism. The Christian way of thinking is there is a difference. There is a form of dualism. We have God, and then we have His creation. And God is not on the other end of a continuum here. So the question is whether or not C.S. Lewis brought this concept into Narnia. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think he did syncretize somewhat, but it's hard to get into the mind of Lewis and ask whether or not Bacchus was there to show that even the Greek gods, all religions, will bow the knee to Christ one day. I don't know if that was his thinking.
Yeah, could have been. Could have been. I don't think it's fair to say that Lewis entirely gave up his Christian metaphysics, his Christian worldview. Metaphysics is just a view of reality. He didn't give up his Christian metaphysics by his use of these idols of Greek and Roman imagination. In fact, when you watch the movie, I think the average person watching the movie and they see a centaur, a half man, half horse, I think they just say, well, that's really weird. I don't think they're thinking, well, there's a god, and I wonder if everybody's going to be worshiping that god. I don't think people think that. I don't think that's what was conveyed by the Narnia tales.
No.
Do you?
No. You don't see that walking around all the time, and yet when I have a cold, sometimes people say, Dave, you're a little hoarse.
Well, the bottom line here is, as you read literature, Dave, as you read anything written by anybody, are you going to find problems with it? I've written a novel or two. If you'd like to read them, you'd be more than happy to. My guess is you're going to find problems with the novels that I write. Anybody who writes novels are going to exhibit some problems, some potential inconsistencies, some potential sins or lack of clarity or lack of truth even. And I do think you're going to see that with C.S. Lewis. He was not perfect. Now, he's a giant. Why do you think he's a giant?
I think Lewis is a giant because he used the art form that is the most long-lasting, that works in the imagination of men, and that's the narrative. He tells the stories. Much like Jesus spoke in parables, Lewis gets into our imaginations, and that has a far longer-lasting effect than just, like, expositing principles.
And not only was he a storyteller, but he was a very good storyteller. There's a reason why his books have been published and republished again and again for the last 50 years of human history. I'm guessing that we're going to see C.S. Lewis into the next few centuries. He was a giant. He was a great storyteller. He was a great writer. Maybe not a perfect writer. Maybe not exemplifying biblical truth to the umpteenth degree. There are problems in his theology. I mean, we don't need to go over all of them. I have some differences with C.S. Lewis. I don't think he was biblical at every single point, but he was a giant. He was a good writer. And the end result of watching a movie like C.S. Lewis's Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the end result of this, I think, is to see with more clarity the grace of God upon dirty, rotten, scoundrel sinners like ourselves in saving us by sacrifice, by sending his son to die, and then raising us up to be kings and priests in his kingdom. I think that's marvelous. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in just a moment to give you just a little bit more on C.S. Lewis and the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Stay with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. This is Kevin Swanson. Today we have looked at Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, a movie that just came out this weekend. It is huge. And it is huge because Christians write good stories. Christians write the very best story. Not to say that every Christian writes a good story, but when it comes to the very best stories, it's going to be Christians that will write them. I think of Daniel Defoe, the first novel. Robinson Crusoe, a fantastic novel. Daniel Defoe being a son of a Puritan, a strong, strong Christian. Or John Bunyan, Pilgrim's Progress, probably the second most popular book in all of history, second only to the Bible, written by John Bunyan. And now we have C.S. Lewis and his tales. Christians write the very best stories, and here's why. Is because Christians have read the very best story of all. That's God's story. Folks, we have a lot of resources in our Parker Resource Center with some of the best stories written by Christians. We have a number of great novels for children. We have Daniel Defoe's Robinson Crusoe, C.S. Lewis's series of books. We have Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan. We have many resources, the very best resources you can find for your children's reading diet. They are at our resource center in Parker. It's online at checkbooks.com, checbooks.com, or call 877-842-CHECK. That's 877-842-CHECK. You can interact with this program. We want to hear what you think about what we think. Just email us at kevin@check.org. That's kevin@chec.org. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, and I'm inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.